This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul. We got John Watson from the Devil's Den with us tonight. Talk a little bit about just some roster construction stuff. I mean, we've hit on the two guys and the seven guys that we've lost, but there's some other things in the works and just wanted to get his kind of takeaways here. So John, obviously we've talked about it on the boards. It's been covered there kind of ad nauseum for all of the portal heads out there. Just your kind of overall takeaway from this offseason compared to last offseason. I think it was maybe a shock that we didn't lose anyone as a transfer last year. Obviously you had seven guys going this year. Maybe not so much of a surprise. If you've kind of been following this thing, you've hinted at it. Maybe the staff has hinted at it, but what do you kind of take away of like what the model is going to look like going forward?
Yeah. So I think last year was probably the exception, not the rule. You know, obviously you had nobody leaving this year. I think a lot of the departures, some were expected, some were maybe not as expected, but, you know, we started talking about it around January where we thought there was going to be a complete reset. I don't know if we thought it was going to be this thorough and maybe not these parties leaving. You know, the expectation was Filipowski would go, Mitchell would go. The hope was that he was going to go pro after having a big sophomore year. McCain played his way into it. But some of the reserve guys, you know, I don't know that that was expected, but maybe at the start of the season, because they came into Duke saying, you know, they were going to be long-term options. And I think they just got impatient. And the new environment of college basketball pretty much encourages guys to be impatient.
Right.
And, you know, that's something you have to adapt to. But based on what we're seeing, how Duke has reacted, you know, I don't think John Shire's ever going to have a team that gets out toughed again. Because he is certainly targeting and bringing in guys who that's just not in their vocabulary. That's not in their game. That the guys he's bringing in are going to be experienced. They're going to be tough. They're going to be athletic. They're going to be versatile. And, you know, you may beat Duke at times, but you're not going to out tough them. And they're going to change the narrative that was pretty prevalent last season, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me is, I mean, I talked about it on here of, you know, you have a dude jump on the scorer's table once. It's like, okay, you know, maybe that was something else. Then you have everyone doing the too small taunt, right? It was kind of a theme that started to develop. I'm sure the staff obviously didn't like it. As a fan, it was not fun to watch that. And maybe you're right. Maybe the only way to get tough is to go out in the portal and do it, because it's hard to do it I think through high school, right? Like it's kind of rare to have like a Justice Winslow type, to have like five of them come in. You kind of have to go get some dudes that have maybe been through that a little bit. Let's talk about the two guys though. So you have Gillis from Purdue, Big Ten Sixth Man of the Year, knockdown shooter, just stud in his role, knows his role. And then you get a kid like Brown who can come in and really probably defend maybe like one through five. He can switch, do a little bit of everything, can play some small ball five for you. You can put him at the four if you need to. What did you like about those? It seemed to be very intentional, and these things kind of seem to get wrapped up pretty quickly.
They get wrapped up pretty quickly, and I know it's going against the message boards and the whole nature of the portal, but it gets wrapped up quickly because Duke has been working with these guys for weeks before the visits are even known about. You know, we talked about it at the beginning of the portal season on the site. There's not going to be a lot of names associated with Duke, and there's not going to be a lot of names confirmed. And that's because they're going to do their due diligence away from the spotlight. They're going to do their due diligence by talking to coaches, by talking to high school coaches, by talking to other players, by talking to opposing coaches. You know, they're going to do their process in the way they want to do it. And I know at times it seems that, you know, maybe Duke's not doing anything, but all of a sudden they get a visit and they get a commitment. Well, that's not by accident. They are condensing an entire recruiting process, and they do their own recruiting process with high school very differently than other schools. But they're condensing this into a matter of weeks. And, you know, there's just not a lot of time for stuff to leak out.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the first part about that. You know, with what I like about what they're doing, they're bringing in guys who are going to compete, guys who know how to win, and guys who are desperate to win. You know, last year you mentioned it. You have people jumping on the table at Cameron. And, you know, the guy who apologizes for it is the head coach.
Mm.
You know, it's not the players. It's, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to speak ill of the departed, as it were, but, you know, there's something that needs to be ingrained in every player who puts on that uniform. And it used to be. And, you know, the guy coaching right now is a guy who was an elite competitor during his college career. And he's incredibly competitive. You know, I mean, you remember last year when we had him on the podcast, you know, we were talking about it, and he'll give it as good as he gets it. You know, some of the stuff we were talking about with him offline, he's a competitive guy. And I think he wants his program to be defined by competitive guys. So Gillis, you've got a guy who he's a blue collar guy. He's a glue guy. He's going to do everything they ask him to do, and he's going to compete. Same thing with Brown. You've got a guy coming in who's going to compete. He came into college as a lower ranked guy, but for 2 years he's worked his butt off, and, you know, shows up every day, puts a hard hat on, you know, was asked to play a small ball five at 6'8" last year, did it, didn't complain, and was productive. You know, they're elite role players, and they're not going to be asked to be, you know, frontline guys. They're not going to be asked to be a top scorer, an alpha dog. They're not going to be asked to be any of that. They're going to be asked to maintain standards, make sure the young guys are held accountable, and produce when they're in. I don't think it's a stretch to say that these two guys are the two best transfers Duke has had in the transfer era, you know, modern transfer era. So we're talking, you know, Theo John and Ryan Young and that kind of thing. I mean, obviously, I don't think either one of them is going to be Seth Curry. I don't think either one's going to be Rodney Hood, anything like that. Rashawn McCloud. Yeah.
I was going to ask you that. Like, do you think we'll ever get back to that? Like, do you think it'll shift to the point where we start looking to the portal for like stars? Or do you think it will stay like, let's try to get these top five kids, and then let's use the portal to kind of like supplement and create the roster around it? Or do you think there's ever a chance where it's like, no, I want a Rodney Hood. I want to go get a dude in the portal that's going to be my like 1A or 1B.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, you know, I think it's a year-to-year basis. I mean, fast forward Rodney Hood's year to this year, does Rodney Hood even make it to another school, or does he just go to the NBA?
Sure.
You know, that's something we have to consider as well. You know, I think the idea is going to be your sweet spot in recruiting is going to be pretty much what this class is. You know, you've got two kids at the top who are going to be one and done no matter what. Then you got a bunch of top 10 to top 25 kids who they're all very good. They're going to be great players. But there's a hole in their game that's keeping them from going to the pros right away. Like, sure. You know, you look at Isaiah Evans. He's 165 pounds. You know, he's not strong enough to play in the NBA yet. You know, you look at, Darren Harris. He's a terrific shooter. He's a scorer. But is he athletic enough to do certain things laterally? You know, that's a question.
Right.
You know, you look at Khan. He's got an incredibly high floor. But is his ceiling enough to get to the NBA right away? Probably not right away. But he will play in the NBA, I think, down the road. And then you look at, you know, Pat, the big center they got coming in. You know, he's improving. He's got a lot of physical gifts. But this day and age, does a center, if you're not a center who has an incredibly well-rounded perimeter game, or you're not Jokic, who, you know, where do you fit?
Right.
And so, you know, you get those guys. And then I think, you know, to your point, you hope that those guys stick around. And then you add the guys like the Gillis, the Browns. You add guys who are going to come in and who are going to, you know, meet your program standards, who are going to be the competitors in practice, and who are going to be okay shouldering a load, but are also going to be okay if a freshman who just is more naturally talented eventually comes online and takes a spot. And that's a tough resume to find, because, you know, to your question about, are we ever going to get a Rodney Hood again, or maybe even a Seth Curry? You know, I would argue Jared McCain was Seth Curry this year. You know, and look at where that landed. I mean, Seth Curry and him were about the same, you know, during Seth's peak year.
Sure.
And, you know, Jared left after a year. Yeah. I mean, it's just, if you're going to find an impact transfer, they're most likely the impact transfer you're going to have to upgrade over your aging, hope and aging. I mean, going to sophomore year, maybe even junior year, five-star recruits, anything that's going to be an upgrade is going to be in the NBA. And so then the question is, are you better off going lateral and bringing a kind of a one-for-one replacement? Or are you better continuing your pipeline by getting that elite high school kid and then giving him time to develop? And I think that the answer to that's going to be a year-to-year basis.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just, unfortunately, it's hard to say. But, I mean, I do know from my offline talks that, you know, they're going to always try to find guys who are team oriented, versatile, talented, and just who put winning above everything else, which sounds like a bunch of rah-rah speech. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to find guys like that. They're out there. But, you know, are you going to see, like, I go back to the original guy in the transfer, you know, Nigel Pack. Are you going to see guys who go out there and who just want a big bag and want a big stage? I can tell you right now, they're not going to Duke. I can just tell you that, because Duke would rather have those stars be developed from within and go from there. Because the reality is, you're not going to get a kid who's going to be a super upgrade alpha dog, because that person's going to be in the NBA.
Sure. Sure. Do you get a sense that they like have a preference over bringing in guys that have multiple years available versus, like, you know, obviously Gillis, this is it for him, but Brown has some years. Ryan Young had 2 years. Obviously Grandison just had the one. So it's kind of been 2 and 2, or does that not really factor in much here?
You know, I think that answer is evolving as well. I think originally they would have liked to have had a guy come in with 1 to 2 years. I don't think it's a deal breaker. Ideally you'd like him to have 2 years, but I also think if you're getting a guy who's coming in going, I'm going to stay 2 years, how high can you really expect him to be in the rotation? And again, it's just that weird balancing act, because yes, you want to get older, but you know, you can't bring in one and done guys, whether they're one and done freshmen or one and done seniors. But if you're going to err on the side of getting older and tougher, you got to find the mix of bringing in the elite one and done freshmen. I mean, like, for instance, Cooper Flagg, no one's going to care that he's one of the younger guys in college, because he's really, really good, right? No one cared how old Zion was. No one cared how old RJ was. No one cared how old Bagley, Ingram, Tatum. No one cared what their age. They were better. But if you're, you know, and that's where we talk about, you know, the lateral replacements. Do you go after a kid in high school who's going to be 17 and maybe 18 during the year, or do you go after the 23-year-old? And what's the production like? And so it's just going to be a balance every year. I think it's mainly going to be, you know, John said it last year when he joined us on the podcast. He wants guys who are Duke guys who are developed and who have relationships. But if there's not enough of those in the high school ranks, they'll go find them in the transfer portal. I think they learned their lesson from trying to recruit the old fashioned way with this sophomore class that just departed, because, you know, they recruited that class. They were all in on that class, and then the freshman class behind them got impatient. And we saw what happened this past season. And, you know, don't get me wrong, Duke was 10 minutes from the Final Four this past season.
Sure.
But I mean, was it a successful season? We talked about this on the recap last time I was on. I don't think so. I mean, you know, they're talking about winning the national title.
Yeah, not compared to expectations, at least.
Correct.
For right. Most schools, it would have been, but.
Correct.
Since you kind of touched on it already, I was going to ask you about the 2025 class being so small. What do you make of that? Is that kind of a response to what we've seen here with the roster just getting a bit too crowded and all these departures and stuff? Or is it just like the nature of that class and they just don't like as many players in that class or something?
I think it's a question of, you know, let's look at the roster right now. They're bringing in another transfer official visitor this weekend. And if they close him out, that's going to be three transfers. And then you're going to have the six freshmen plus the two returnees. So that's 11 scholarship players with two guys who are just, you know, on scholarship as practice players as your 13. So going forward next year, I think you're going to see at best 4 to 6 returners. I think you're going to, you know, obviously you got a 6-man freshman class. The top two were gone, one and done for sure. So there's four. You hope they all come back. You hope that, you know, it's a long season. It's a grind. Someone may get impatient again. I don't know. So let's say at best case, you got four of them coming back. Of the three transfers that are probably going to be here, you can go ahead and say goodbye to two of them because they're out of eligibility. You know, does Malik Brown come back for another year? You hope so. So there's five. You know, so that's five players coming back and you need 13.
Proctor Foster. I mean,
exactly.
Maybe, you know, who knows?
I'd say my suspicion would be Proctor would go, Foster would come back. That would be my hope. And I think that's reasonable. So, I mean, you know, at that, you're looking at 5-6 players coming back. You need another five. 2025 is not a great recruiting class. You know, again, it's just a weak class. There's some guys in there. I don't know that they're going to get the boosters. In fact, I would be somewhat surprised at this point, just the way things are going.
The language there is just not pro-Duke. Yeah,
it's aggressive. It's almost aggressive with it. And, you know, I know for a fact it's been difficult for Duke to make headway there for whatever reason. And at some point they need to cut their losses, in my opinion. But, you know, again, I'm not privy to private conversations. I know what I see and know what I hear. But, I think you're going to see, you know, three or four commits from 2025. So let's say it's three. And we've got the six coming back, so that's nine. And then you get one to three transfer players. You know, maybe Foster leaves and you need three transfers. But I think that's going to be the model. You're going to have, you know, 4 to 6 returnees, 1 to 3 from the transfer portal, and 3 or 4 from the high school ranks. And, you know, if you did that, you would still have a pretty experienced team. Because you don't have three freshmen. Everybody else would be sophomores, juniors, or seniors.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking it would be a lot easier to talk a guy like Harris or Khan into coming back. Like, let's say maybe their role wasn't huge this year, but you're looking at a roster that still has 4 or 5 empty spaces there, and you're like, you come back, there's a definite role for you. Obviously, you're not promising anything, but it's not like this year where guys were kind of looking at it and being like, there are three guys coming in at my position.
Well, right. I agree with you. I think the second part of that and the unsaid part of it is that, you know, these guys have to perform. Now, they may not be getting minutes, but they need to perform in practice. There needs to be a reason that Duke doesn't over-recruit them or recruit over them, as it were. And, you know, I think that was an issue last year. Without going too far into it, I think that was a major issue last year. You know, you can't recruit and, you know, tell a guy, hey, you're going to come in as a freshman. You may not play as much as you want as a freshman, but there's a path to a sophomore season. If that's held open, that's great. But if that guy's not working for most of his freshman season because he's getting, you know, down and dejected, and you know, rightly so, it's hard when you've been God's gift to basketball for however many years, and now all of a sudden you're coming in and not playing. I get it. But if you're not going to be patient, you know, the coaching staff's not going to be able just to wait 3 years for you to, quote, you know, work through it.
Yeah.
It's just not how it's going to be. And so, you know, to your point, if we're going to have guys who come in and who don't put in the work, don't put in the time, and who aren't practicing well and who are not, you know, ready to be called on whenever it is, then, you know, they may not play this year and they may not be able to be relied upon next year either. And if the coaches feel they can't rely upon you, they're crazy not to recruit over you. I mean, especially this day and age.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's take a quick little break and then we'll come back and let's talk about the last portal transfer to come in here.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
All right. Well, John, you kind of hinted at it a little bit, but I think they're bringing in Sion James coming in from Tulane. I think he's a point guard. Maybe you call him a combo guard, but at 6'6", got a ton of size here. He's played 4 years already, so this would be his final year. This seemed to have picked up pretty quickly. Well, it became public, I guess, recently. The visit's coming up here. What do you know about this? How do you feel about this coming in? It seems like things could kind of ramp up pretty fast here.
Yeah, he's exactly what has been conveyed that Duke is looking for. As you mentioned, you know, he's played 4 years at Tulane. He's averaged about 35 minutes per game over the course of his 4 years. Over the last 2 years, he's played over 37 minutes a game. You know, he's a decent career shooter. He shoots about 47% from the floor, 38%. From the perimeter. Free throw shooting's around 70%, but you know, he rebounds, he handles the ball, he dishes it pretty well. He can guard 1 through 4, and I mean, he's a tank at, you know, 6'6", 220 pounds. You'll see the pictures of him in his highlights and everything. I mean, he's not a guy who's going to get bodied. You know, you're not going to have a guard backing him down or anything like that. He's a very good player. And he's tough. And, you know, one of the things that I was told that they were looking for, going back to literally the day after NC State, was, you know, they're looking for guys who are tough, versatile, skilled, but also guys who are just desperate to win. And, you know, no disrespect, but playing at Tulane, he hasn't won a lot. but he's well thought of on NBA draft boards, it looks like. So yeah, if they can close this out, he would be a very, very good addition. And, you know, he could line up as a starting three, could line up as a two. They could go super huge in the backcourt and play him, Proctor, and Foster with Flag at the four. And you would have a roster of, you know, 6'5", 6'5", 6'5", 6'9", and then whoever you want to put in the middle. So it's just, you know, if he comes in, I will say I expect him to be the last portal addition. I don't expect him to go after anybody else. And if he is, you would have an entire rotation for Duke basketball next season that is 6'5" and taller. They would be huge.
Yeah.
At every position.
Yeah, that's kind of wild.
And, you know, you figure, I mean, just the attitude and the approach and the physicality, you know, all over the court. It would be night and day from what we just saw. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can kind of switch gears, kind of just, I guess not really, but it goes into this too. A lot's been made of like the NIL stuff. There's been a little bit of talk here. Is there any concern on your end regarding like the collective for Duke and NIL and maybe where that's headed and how they kind of figure that things out? Or are you pretty confident in this process and it's still kind of going to be like fluid maybe?
I think the NCAA needs to figure it out fast. You know, we were talking about it offline. To answer your question, I don't think Duke has anything to worry about. You know, this is a program that endowed the Legacy Fund 15, 20 years ago. You know, every time Mike Krzyzewski decided he was getting ready to go coach in the NBA, they would come up with a multi-million-dollar practice facility or some other kind. I mean, you know, Duke basketball's brand is secure both in reputation and in finances. There is no worry about them not having the money. That being said, you don't become wealthy, from what I'm told. You don't become wealthy if you are frivolous with your money. And, you know, do I see Duke getting into a bidding war for a kid who averaged 7 points in the Horizon League like we're seeing in some of these transfer portals? No. You know, Nigel Pack was not worth $400,000 or whatever he got from, you know, the Papa John's or the LifeLock guy or whatever it was. It's just not worth it. You know, the Duke brand is jet fuel for guys who want to do it the right way. You know, that being said, just going back to the earlier point I made, they've got to fix this. It's going to hurt college basketball. Incentivizing guys to leave every single offseason. I mean, forget let's not even talk about the effect on the fans where you can't even, you know, have a real relationship with the program you follow anymore because it's complete turnover every single year. Forget that. I mean, what about the development of these kids? You know, you got an 18-year-old who didn't play a lot as a freshman, so he's going to go, you know, he's going to go into the portal and make, you know, tens of thousands of dollars or whatever he makes. You know, to go somewhere else that, you know, if it doesn't work out there, he's just going to leave again. I mean, at some point, you figure with AAU, high school, trainers, and everything else, I mean, these kids can have 5, 6, 7, 8 coaches in a 3 to 4 year period. I mean, how do you get better doing that?
Yeah.
You have to have consistency. And, you know, I'm not saying the kids shouldn't get paid. They absolutely should have been paid. They should have been paid for years. But the fact that it went from, you know, absolutely no pay to less than that regulation, it's just not good. Yeah. And it's troubling for the state of college basketball. It's troubling for the state of, you know, the kids' development. And, you know, the NCAA is already teetering. You're starting to devalue your biggest and best product. And, you know, say college football all you want. You know, wake me when college football has a tournament worth $8 billion.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, but, you know, the same issues are there for college football, obviously. But for basketball, it's even worse because, you know, two guys can make or break your team. You know, college football, okay, you lose a quarterback, whatever, there's 1,000 more.
Yeah.
You know,
and the physicality in football, it's such an expectation where most high school seniors coming in right. don't really expect to start, right? Like you have to be really, right. really good to start as a freshman. And that's kind of understood. Whereas basketball, it's not quite that.
Football, it's, you know, football, I think it's just a 2-year difference. So, I mean, you know, if you're not playing by the end of your sophomore year, you sure. can go ahead and move on because the coach is done with you in most situations. College basketball, I mean, you know, if you're not playing by your freshman year, guys think it's over.
Yeah.
And it's just like I said, Krzyzewski was a big part, a big proponent of wanting the game to be regulated in a fair and equitable manner for players, coaches, and everybody in between. He was right. And, you know, right now, I don't know if there's enough agreement, but they've got to do something because it's just, man, it's scary what the game could turn into. I mean, Duke was always the program. Everyone, you know, you got used to guys. Yeah. And even in the one and done era, you know, I would argue that it didn't really get crazy until after 2015. No, but
yeah.
even then, you know, Emile Jefferson hung around. You know, you had guys. Grayson
Matt
Allen.
Jones stuck around.
Wendell Moore. Yeah, that was recently, too. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I know Trey Jones only played 2 years, but, I mean, he made an impact because he was
right.
familiar with him. I mean, you know, I think about this group that just left. And, I mean, you know, people want to call out Jeremy Roach. But, I mean, you know, and God love him. He had a great senior year. And he was fantastic for 2.5 games in March as a sophomore. But, I mean, he's not Quinn Cook. And, you know, quite frankly, Jeremy Roach is going to leave Duke after his sophomore year until that tournament. I mean, he was gone. And, you know, it's kind of like you think about this group that just left. I mean, Filipowski, great freshman year. And then just it was just a weird year this year for him, watching him anyway. I mean, and I understand why he got frustrated and everything else, but I mean, for me, looking at it with my fan hat on, I didn't enjoy his sophomore year all that much. It was hard to watch at times.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Mitchell, you know, I mean, you know, again, thanks for the 2 years, but, you know, a guy who had a retired uniform number come out of the rafters, and that's what you did in 2 years? I mean, yeah. You know, it's... And you can't even get to know him because, I mean, you know, who's the most familiar guy coming back? It's Tyrese Proctor, and we don't really know much about him because, again, this past season he dealt with injuries and everything else. And then, you know, unfortunately, I would say Proctor's – he's certainly got a lot of motivation with the way the season ended.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just hard to – you know, it's hard to really connect with a program when you just – you don't have guys who are staples.
Yeah.
You know? And – that's tough. And, you know, for Duke, it's even harder now because, you know, one of the biggest staples in the history of the game walked away, you know, retired and, you know, was the greatest of all time. And that's great. But now you've got, that's one less thing. And so, you know, I think one of the things Shire's dealing with right now, and this is a completely different topic, and I'm sorry for rambling, but I mean, you know, what is Duke right now?
Yeah.
I mean, what is it? You know, it's not Krzyzewski anymore. You know, it's not, you know, the guys who would just out hustle you and out be, you know, essentially the blue collar guys that made Duke basketball. It's not that anymore. It's not the one and done guys right now because, you know, the best pro to play for Shire right now is Derek Lively. And he averaged what, 3 points and 3 rebounds or something.
Yeah.
I mean, he has, and that's not really fair, but the reality is John hasn't been the coach long enough.
Yeah. You
know, to establish it. So, I mean, I think what we're going to see this year is a real doubling down on, look, guys, what made Duke basketball was not Zion Williamson. It was not RJ Barrett. It was not Marvin Bagley. You know, it was guys who just blood, sweat, and tears, and they would outwork you. They were more talented with you, but they were more talented, and they would do anything in the world to win, not only because they wanted to win, but because they could not stand to lose. And I think they've got to redouble down and rediscover that because otherwise, you know, this new era of, you know, hey, come over to this team and play 15 extra minutes a game and we'll pay you a little bit of money. It just it incentivizes guys. And so you've really got to look at these guys and figure out who they are and who they want to be. And there's not a lot of margin for error, because if you make a mistake, you've got a disjointed season on your hands.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the identity thing. I've been wondering about that, because for essentially the last 10 years, 12 years, Duke's mm-hmm. identity has been as kind of the NBA pipeline, right? Them in Kentucky. If you're an elite prospect, that's where you go in order to get to the NBA and hopefully get to NBA stardom. Mm-hmm. But so now, if we're kind of moving away from that model a little bit more towards the portal, it's just, to me, can Duke maintain its brand as kind of like a recruiting powerhouse if we're not as focused on creating that NBA pipeline?
And do they want to, right? Like, is that even the best model now? That's a good question, because I think it's so much of it is just in flux.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's something you're going to see, you know, Shire really working on right now, is the program wants, and the fans obviously would like it. You want guys who are going to take pride in putting on the uniform. But you still want the best players.
Yeah.
But, you know, do you want a guy, you know, you're not going to get the top guard, you know, in the portal, or the top big man in the portal. You're just not going to get them, because those guys want to come and they want the spotlight on them. That's what they want. And that's not who Duke wants to bring in. They want to bring in the best possible player who is willing to do everything. They essentially want to be a program that's going to produce elite role players in the NBA. Now, if you can get a Jason Tatum, you take him all day, every day.
Sure.
If you can get a Kyrie Irving, you take him all day, every day. But, you know, outside of that, you want the guys who are not maybe going to be one and done guys. You want guys who are going to really just, I mean, look at Danny Hurley and what he's done up at Connecticut. I mean, they're tough, they execute, they're well coached, and you know, I think they've done a really good job. And you know, I think that's something Duke wants to emulate. They definitely want to get tougher, they definitely want to get older, and they definitely want to bully you. But they want to bully you in the sense of they want to beat you from skill, they want to beat you with talent, and they want to beat you with effort.
Yeah.
And that's difficult. But that's
maybe
that's they want to find.
Maybe kind of, and I hate to bring this up on a Duke podcast here, but I mean, if you look at kind of what Hubert Davis has done, that almost is kind of what you're describing a little bit, right? Like, maybe we don't want the star, but it seems that they're getting some of these kids that come in and will just die for Carolina, right? Like Cormac Ryan on his press conference just went in there, and you would have thought he would have played there 7 years. I mean, Harrison Ingram the same way. Manic, obviously Nance was a bust, but 3 out of 4 is not a bad hit rate.
Yeah, I think that's right. But again, you know, that happens because, well, a couple things. I mean, you know, you had program guys, you had pillars of the program.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, I mean, you had RJ Davis, you had Armando Bacot, you know, you had guys who came in and just, they fit the system. And the transfers they had coming in did exactly what they needed.
Yeah.
You know, Manic was, he's a good player, but he never played with a guy like Bacot, who's going to sit there and demand a double team. And then, you know, Manic, he's got that quick release.
Yeah, put him in the corner and his money.
They've had some luck. But again, they were veterans. You know, they didn't fall apart when they got punched in the mouth with a team going on a run. You know, they didn't fall apart when they had a bad loss. They didn't have their coach out, you know. I mean, I don't follow him that much, but I never remember Hubert Davis going out and like having to bristle at a question over his team's toughness. I never, sure. You know, I don't remember that. I look at this past season, and you know, and Shire basically stood up and took a lot of bullets for his team and had to answer a lot of questions. And they're the questions that old school Duke, the players would have just gone nuts. I mean, I think the most damning thing for me this season for them was, you know, they have a players only meeting when the season's almost over.
Mm.
I mean, it's like, guys, you lost 8 games before the NCAA tournament. I mean, I know that doesn't seem like a lot. You know, great, you won 70% of your games, but we're talking about a program here that used to, you know, losing 7 or 8 games was a catastrophe.
Yeah.
And you know, I can tell you right now, Shire is not going to be happy losing 8 to 9 games a year.
He's just not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, I guess just looking at it, I just go back to it. You know, a lot of guys want the rewards and the trappings of playing Duke basketball. They do, you know, the private charters, the 5-star restaurants, the 5-star hotels, you know, the best of everything that Nike can even dream up with, best technology, you know, pro facilities. A lot of people want that. Not a lot of them are willing to do what it takes to essentially live up to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, JJ Redick said it on his podcast years ago. You know, once Kay got on top of the Olympic team, you know, he started, the program changed. There weren't any more of those midnight practices coming off the bus after you got blown out at Clemson or whatever. Mm-hmm. They just didn't happen anymore.
Yeah. I remember he said that it was like, this is like an NBA walkthrough, right? Like, practice is kind of like an NBA walkthrough. Guys are kind of doing their own things over here. And he was like, this isn't, now I don't know whether that's good or bad, but he was like, it's definitely different.
I think it's a different era now, but I mean, I also think that, you know, I think John really, he's going to do well to make it clear that you earned your way to a Duke scholarship. That's not the top of the mountain. And if you think it is, you know, maybe you need to get off the train now, because top of the mountain is winning this thing, making a run at it. Mm. And, you know, bad luck can happen, you know, Kyrie Irving's team. You know, Zion's team, you know, Jason Williams's junior year.
Yeah.
Bad things happen. It's a one and done tournament. But again, the identity is something that I think is really being brought home with all these, the guys they're looking at. And, you know, Gillis and Brown already, if they land James, he's another one who just big, strong, versatile. And guys who just want to win and who want to do things the right way and kind of a vintage throwback thing. And then you sprinkle those guys in around. I mean, I'll tell you that the word on these freshmen is that they may not be as talented as the 2015 kids. I mean, I don't know that there's a Jahlil Okafor in this class who just, you know, you throw in the ball and you got 2 points, just how it is.
Sure.
I don't think there's a Tyus Jones in this class. I mean, I love Cooper Flagg. I think he's one of the better recruits they've had, but he's a guy who's just going to make everybody better. You know, is he going to be an alpha? Is he going to be Jason Tatum? I don't think so. But he's going to make everybody better. And his impact will be like that. But you know, everything I've heard from the coaching staff about these freshmen, they've got a lot of 2015 in them as far as approach and mentality goes. They're going to walk on campus and you're going to have these old grizzled vets there and they're just going to completely go at each other every single day in practice and they're going to make each other better. And, you know, there's not going to be someone's feelings getting hurt because someone's trying to take your spot. You know, it's expected. And, you know, if someone beats you in this day of practice, that doesn't mean they'll beat you tomorrow. And you know, that's what they want. Are there going to be some hurt feelings along the way? Yeah, probably. But, you know, that's just going to be what it's going to be going forward. And
yeah,
I think they are going to really reiterate the identity going forward.
Yeah. Makes me appreciate a guy like Tyrese too, that just kind of was absolutely. Like, nah, I just never even like entertained it. It's this, I came to Duke, I committed to Duke, and then we're going to ride this thing out. Obviously he wants to go to the NBA and he seems like a kid that has the tools to potentially get there at some point, but to me, it definitely helps me appreciate him maybe a little bit more. John, before we get out of here, any kind of inclination updates? I know Duke keeps this stuff so vested on where maybe Foster is at and his rehabilitation. Do you expect this to linger throughout the summer? Can we expect him to be playing pickup at some time in July here? Like, what's the word out there?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I haven't really followed up much on it. As you know, it's anytime there's an injury, it's indefinite.
Yeah.
You know, I think... You know, we can certainly ask about it, maybe if we can get a repeat of Coach Shire on the podcast, maybe stay tuned for that, listeners.
Yeah, but, that'd be nice.
Yeah, wouldn't. But you know, what I would say is I would expect him to be to do something this summer. I don't know what. I honestly haven't followed up on it. You know, I know I don't even know if he required surgery, to be honest with you. And, you know, if he did, I would point out that you just look at last season. You know, they knew Flip needed surgery. He had it before the banquet. I didn't notice Foster. I didn't really look at the stuff on the banquet. So, I mean, I don't think he looks like he'd been post-surgery at that point. But, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know. But I do expect them to be, but for, you know, the big center coming in from NBA Africa.
Yeah, Common, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can't say. I think it's Malosh or Malak or something.
Yeah, I've seen it. Malosh. Yeah. It's Malosh, yeah.
I'm hoping Dave Bradley will put together like a whole video, you know, introducing him when he gets here so we can all not butcher his name so much. But, you know, aside from him, I expect everyone to be going at it this summer. And he won't because he's going to be playing for the South Sudan in the Olympics, most likely leading them to victory over Team USA. If fun you stuff. Listen to our message boards.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Well, John, we appreciate it. And again, you know, obviously we're going to try to get some guests on over the summer. We'll try to get some things lined up over there. I've touched base with some of the folks over at Duke. So at some point, maybe once guys get back on campus and things start to kind of settle, maybe we can get some folks on here. But as always, rate, review, subscribe. You can find us over on the boards at thedevilsden.com. A lot of portal stuff going on over there if that's your thing. Recruiting will probably start to pick up at some point here as well, I'm sure. You can email us at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter/X @devilsdenpod247, or you can find John at the Devil's Den. And keep the faces strong and the rope high. Go Duke.